We're holding on Chavvav Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Now that we've talked about the various methods of kinyan for all different kinds, for an Isha, for an Eved Ivri, for an Eved Kenani, etc. So now we're going to talk about now we're going to talk about the method of kinyan for karka, and then we're also going to talk about kinyan agav, where you acquire karka and with it you acquire metalbin. So the Mishnah says, "Nechosim sheyesh lahem achrayus, nechosim that have achrayus, which means karka, and they're called nechosim she'en, they're called nechosim sheyesh lahem achrayus, because when a person, as we know, when a person borrows money, there's a shibud on the karka, and therefore there's achrayus. Therefore, a person, you have the you have the you have the responsibility of." Paying back the loan that goes on the karka. So therefore it's called nechosim sheyesh lahem achrayus. Another point is also the Gemara talks about in different places. We learned about it a little bit in Gittin that when you sell property, there's usually an achrayus clause involved that you're saying if this property ever gets taken away from you, then I will reimburse you for it. In fact, we even have an opinion, and this is the halacha, that if it wasn't written in the shtar, it's considered tov sofer, it's considered just a mistake, and the and there still is achrayus. So for those reasons, karka is called nechasim sheyesh achrayus. Anyway, niknin b'kesef of a shtar of a chazaka, they can be acquired by paying money or by writing a shtar. Without money, elsewhere the Gemara talks. Actually, not elsewhere. Right here in our Gemara, actually, the Gemara is going to talk about. Usually, you need something more than a shtar. Usually, you're not giving away your karka for just the value of the shtar. So we'll see in the Gemara what the case is where a shtar is enough over chazaka, and also it's enough to do chazaka. For example, Rashi says you dug in the ground a little bit with a shovel. Or for example, you have, let's say, a field that's adjacent to yours. There usually would be between one field and the next, there would be a berm of earth. There would be like a long, skinny pile of dirt between along the border between one field and the next to mark them off one from another. So here you go and trample that down and flatten it out. So that would be another form of chazakah. And actually give several other a couple of other examples. You have a door in there and you lock it or you unlock it, etc. Anyway, so all of those are various forms of chazaka, so karka can be acquired with any of those, as we'll see in the Gemara how we know that. She'ein lahem achrayus, on the other hand, nechosim she'ein lahem achrayus, which is to say metalpelin, nicknim. A nicknim, ela b'mashicha, those can be acquired only with mashicha. We'll see a little bit about it in the Gemara. We'll talk about briefly a machlokas, whether that's Daraisa or Darabanan. Mainly that machlokas is presented in Bava Metzia. Anyway, so when we say a nikkun alam of a shicha, we don't mean, I mean, obviously there are other methods as well. You have chalifin, you have what we're going to talk about over here, kinyan aga. But what we mean is, in other words, kesef, shtar, and chazaka don't work with metalpelin. Now, on the other hand, these nechosim she'ein lahem achrayus, the movable property, the metalpelin, those can be acquired with nechosim she'ein lahem achrayus using kesef shtar or chazaka. Meaning, so if Reuven is selling to Shimon karka and also metalpelin, and we're going to see in the Gemara, does it mean the metalpelin have to actually be located in the karka or not? Then that works. That's another form of kinyan. So now you have an example where metalpelin can be acquired with kesef or shtar, etc. Is where you bought them with karka. That kind of thing is called kinyan agav. Furthermore, also the Mishnah says, v'zoyke, and then you have the connection between them also helps the other way around. Like this, you have if there's an argument between two people involving dine mamonis, then of course they go to Beis Din, and you have the cases, for example, where Reuven claims to Shimon, "You owe me X amount of money," and Shimon denies it. So if he denies part of it, then Minat Torah, he has to swear, he's a modu mitzas. If he denies all of it, midaraisa, he doesn't have to swear. It's kofar hakol midrabanan, from a takana of the Chachmei HaGemara, he swears a shvuas heses. You have other cases as well where the shvur is involved. In general, the rule is that a shvur doesn't apply to karka. The various places where the Torah talks about swearing a shvur, in each one, there's a miut that it applies only to metaltlin and not karka. So therefore, in other words, if Reuven were to say to Shimon, this karka is mine, and Shimon says, no, only half of it is yours, he wouldn't be swearing. But now what we're saying is, on the other hand, if there are metaltlin involved in the claim as well, then there is a shvur, and then the shvur also brings in zoikikim. It also causes that the nechosim, sheyesh lehem achrayus, the shava aleihem, that you have to swear for them. So in other words, if Reuven were to claim to Shimon, first of all, two things. This land that you're occupying is mine. And second of all, you also owe me $100. Or for example, I deposited some kalim by you for safekeeping. And where are they? So then when Shimon is swearing regarding the kalim and regarding the money, he would also have to swear. He would also have to swear regarding the karka. There you have the agav working the other way around. Kinyan agav, you have the karka, the primary thing, and then the metaltlin go along with it, and they're acquired with kesef or shtar or chazaka. And here you have the other way around. Karka by itself wouldn't require a shvur, but because it's together with metaltlin, then you do have a shvur. So we'll talk about that more. We'll talk about that more in the Gemara later on, Rest Hashem, tomorrow. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Bekesef menolon." Where do we know that karka can be acquired with money? And the answer is, "Amachizki or amakra." You have the pasuk. So in Yumiya, you have the story. We read the beginning of the story as the haftorah of Parshas Bahar, because since it's Parshas Bahar, it talks about sales of land. Then it fits with it. Anyway, you have the story over there. You have the story over there in Sefer Yumiya, where Hashem tells Yumiya that. Around the corner. So Hashem tells Yirmiyah, your cousin Hanamel is going to come to you and ask you, I had to sell my field, you being the closest relative, the Goyal, then you please go and buy back the field. And Yirmiyah does it, and he writes a shtar, as we're going to bring the posuk soon. And then afterwards, he davens to Hashem and asks, what was the point of that? This is the siege of Yerushalayim is already going on. Yerushalayim is all but fallen. Eretz Yisrael is all but destroyed. What's the point of me buying this field from Hanamel, and you're telling me that I should put away the shtar, that'll be accessible for years after that, because one day fields are yet going to be rebought in this country. So Hashem explains to him, yes, there is going to be a churban, there is going to be a golus, but the Jewish people are going to come back from it. Hashem is going to bring them back. And the last pasuk, Hashem says over there in that nevuah, sodes bakesef yifnu, people will buy fields with money. And they'll be writing shtaris, they'll be having edim, etc. So there will be a future for the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. So we learn from that expression, sodis v'kesef yikonu, that fields can be acquired using money. Tosfos points out, why don't we bring the pasuk by Ephron, where we see that Avraham paid money for Maris and Achbela. And the answer is, you could say a goy is different. When you're buying from a goy, you don't necessarily have the concept of mashicha. You don't have the concept of mashicha because mashicha only applies between Jews, and you don't have many of the other forms of kinyan. So you could argue that kesef is the only one. When it comes to Jews, where you do have various other methods of kinyan, how do we know that kesef also works from that pasuk? You were going to say something? Guess not. Okay. So the Gemara asks, "Ve'ema ad ikhshtar." Fine, but we say that maybe kesef by itself is not enough. Maybe you need to also have a shtar. That same pasuk continues. They'll buy fields with money, and they'll write a sefer. They'll write a document, v'chosim, and they'll sign it. So maybe the pasuk is implying that you're going to need both. The answer is iksiv yikonul v'soif kidkamer. Sure, if it said sodes bakesef v'chosim v'seif v'chosim yikonu, then you would say that yes, it means when is the yikonu, when is the field going to be acquired? Only if you have kesef and the chosim v'seif v'chosim, which is a shtar. hashtag yikonu meikra, since it says yikonu right after kesef at the beginning, means kesef koni, means the kesef itself is what's accomplishing the kenyan. Shtar raya ba'almahu, and the shtar is only there as a raya that you give him the shtar, so you have a raya. So he has a raya later on that he bought the field. Later on, you can't claim and say that he stole the field from you. Other people will need it as a raya if he wants to sell it to them, etc. But the actual kinyan itself is being accomplished with kesef, which is why it says sodis be kesef yikonu, or yiknu rather. Omar Rav lo shonu el b'makom shein kos v'nes hashtar. However, Rav says this that we're saying that kesef by itself works is only in places where they don't write a shtar. So they just say they sell the field and everybody knows that now it belongs to Pliny. Abu b'makom shekos v'nes hashtar. But in places where they write a shtar, says Rav lo kona, then he's not kona unless he receives a shtar. Furthermore, the e-porish, and furthermore, even if he states explicitly that he wants to acquire with one or with the other, porish, then saying that is effective, and therefore it means that he can do the kinyan however he wants, kesef only or shtar only or both.
E-porish means if he specifies.
If he says explicitly, for example, so let's say we're talking in a place where they don't regularly write a shtar, but this particular person says, I don't want to be considered to have acquired this field unless there's kesef and a shtar for an ayah, then fine. What he says, we have to pay attention to what he says, and therefore you need both of them, and vice versa. If it's a place where they do write a shtar, then where they don't write, in the place where they do write a shtar, and he says, I don't need a shtar, I consider it enough that I'll just give kesef, then that also works. But Bnei Yeshua actually brings up a point. He says, so what's the chiddush? We know, kol tanai shem mamon kayim. You want to make a tanai in any monetary matter, then fine. So he says, because you could argue that maybe, you could argue that it's not so much a tanai over here, you're saying that maybe if you only have one and not the other, or if you acquire both, or whatever it is, maybe you don't have a kinyan here at all. So therefore we're saying no, you do have a kinyan. Because ultimately the kinyan depends on smichus das. To be koina something requires that you have a smichus das, that you have a certain mental guarantee that this sale is actually going to be valid and you're not going to have problems with it later on. So when you make this tanai and the tanai is fulfilled, so then you have that smichus das. So, but the chiddush is that you would have thought
that's not with money, that's to be with a star.
Right, one way or the other. I mean, it depends. But the point is, in other words, that you might say, I have enough smichus das with money and I don't need a star for it. So that's the chiddush. In other words, you shouldn't think that in a place where they write a star, the kinyan is incomplete until the shtar is written, even if he says otherwise. Was it because maybe he doesn't have smichus das, and we're saying he does, and therefore it is a valid kinyan, and vice versa. And the Gemara says, ki hodir of Idi Bar Oven, as we have the example of what Rav Idi Bar Oven used to do. Ki zabin ara, when he would buy a plot of land, Omar, he would tell the seller, ina b'kaspa ikni, ina b'shtari ikni. I want to have my choice of whether I'm acquiring it with only the kesef or only the shtar. Sometimes I might prefer to acquire it with the kesef. And the point is, that way, if you want to change your mind, you won't be able to. What happens, in other words, I paid the money, and then before I actually come and take over the field, you decide you want to change your mind. You have somebody else who wants to pay more for it or whatever. So you say, no, I paid you kesef, and that's enough to acquire it, and therefore it's mine, and you right away, and you can't change your mind. On the other hand, if I want, I'm only going to be koina once the shtar is written. That way, I have the option open to me of changing my mind and being mevatelet because I haven't received the shtar yet. So we see that a person can make such a tanai. He can say, in other words, that I don't have a complete smichus das until I receive the shtar, or he can say I don't need that. the Achronim talk about the related point nowadays in most, if not all, countries nowadays. When you sell property, you have a central registry. You know, you have the title office, or whatever, where such things are written down. So therefore, does that mean that the kinyan doesn't fully take effect until it's recorded over there, or is it not? Is it enough? Maybe even then that kesef conceivably could acquire property for you before it's written down in the actual books.
Well, there's a deposit you give for kesef, and then there's the papers that the lawyer gives you. Then you have the registry, so you have a few different.
Right, so I'm saying, so you have the question. In other words, those papers constitute, one of those papers anyway, constitutes the shtar. So, yeah. Then that explains how we know that kesef works from sodis ba kesef yiknu, and we know that kesef works exclusively because it says the word yiknu after kesef rather than after the shtar. But it says sodis v'kesef yiknu v'chosev v'seifa v'chosev.
The ksiva comes afterwards.
So therefore, the ksiva comes only afterwards, right? Anyway, okay. So now, what about a shtar? We said the next thing is you can also acquire real estate with a shtar minolon. So where do we know that from? Ilema b'shum dichtiv. Are you going to say on the basis of the continuation from the pasuk from Yirmiyah that you quoted, where it says v'chosev v'seifa v'chosem v'hoyed edim? They're going to write it in a document and sign it and have Edom witness it. So you're going to say that implies that writing a shtar is enough. But what do you mean? V'amit shtar raya ba'almahu? Didn't we just say that the shtar in that pasuk is evidently only a shtar raya, not a shtar kinyan? Elamei hocha, rather we can learn it from a little bit earlier in the story where Yirmiyah describes how he bought the field from Hanamel. Again, you have Hanamel come to him and said that Knei Lecha Sodi Asher Ba'anoses, buy my field that's an Anoses, because, in other words, Hanamel is saying, I have to sell my field, and you being the closest relative, you should be the one buying it, so it stays in the family. You have similarly in Megillas Rus, you have the same kind of thing over there where the Melech had to sell property, and Boaz is discussing with the Goyal over there which one of us should be the one to buy it to first, and along with that comes marrying Rus, etc., etc. Yeah,
that was Agav.
Wasn't Kinyan Agav? No, that was Kinyan Karka. But the point is, in other words, there it doesn't specify there. Actually, it says the Kinyan with it. So what it said, what you have is over there. There, the Goyal transferred his rights to Boaz with Chalifin. That's something else. Sholafish Nava. There, it doesn't actually say how the Kinyan Karka was actually accomplished, which is why the Gemara is not bringing that. But there, what you have is, in other words, so Boaz, when he has everybody gathered together, he explains Elimelech had become poor because he lost all his money in Moab. So Naomi had to sell fields of that belonged to her husband, and now we want them to stay in the family, so we don't want that a stranger should buy them. So therefore, you, the Goyal, buy them, neged Ayoshim, neged Ziknei Ami, etc. And the guy says, sure, I'm willing to do that. Yes, the property should stay in the family. And then Boaz tells him, but you should realize there's another detail in there as well. There's another tonight. You also have to marry Rus. And then the guy says, nothing doing. Loyash penash says nachlosi. And he tells Boaz, you do it. And so Boaz buys the properties and marries Rus.
He couldn't do the first half.
That was the thing. Boaz is telling him, in effect, there's a t'nai over here. Rus is also a co-owner of these properties from her husband, Machlon, and she's not willing to sell unless you marry her. So then the Goyal.
This was his chachma.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, that was maybe Rus Taka had that. The Pashtus Rus wanted to get married. That was why she had gone to Boaz over there and in the garden and told him, you have to be Goyal. So, yeah. Anyway, the point is, So again, returning to the story of Yirmiyah, though, so you have, again, it's a similar kind of thing. Hanamel, his cousin, tells him, I have property I need to sell. Rather than selling it to a stranger, I want to sell it to you, you being a relative, and that way it'll remain in the family, and that's how it should be. Because, again, this is a field that he had inherited from his ancestors. And Hashem tells Yirmiyah ben Nevuah that he should do that, and he should preserve the document because it's still going to be needed many years later.
Also, even though in between going to flip it over,
that was what Yirmiyah was wondering about.
Right. How's
it going to help? And Hashem tells him, because one day this is going to be a simon for the Jewish people for the future, that in the future there will be sales and purchases of land in Eretz Yisrael between Jews again, because the Jewish people will return to Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, so Yirmiyah says the expression over there, v'ekach ha-sefer ha-nikna, I took the document of purchase. So that implies, in other words, that, so in other words, it's true that Yirmiyah paid money. It does say in the Pesukim he paid money, but since he calls it sefer ha-nikna, then therefore that implies that the primary kinyan is being done with the shtar. Or another way of looking at it is, yes, the kinyan is primarily done with kesef, but the fact that the pasuk calls it sefer hamikna is shows us that you can also accomplish the kinyan with a shtar exclusively. However, amar Shmuel lo yishtanu ela b'shtar matana. That would apply only to a shtar matana, so there's no money changing hands. So then Reuven writes out a document to Shimon that says, I'm giving you this field or this house or whatever it is. Avo b'mecher, but when it comes to a sale, says Shmuel, lo yikana ad sheyitn lo dami. He would only acquire only if he gives him money, because after all, the guy's not giving away his field for free. So without kesef, having changed hands, then you don't really have a sale over here. However, Mosiv Rav Hamnuna, but Rav Hamnuna points out a contradiction to that. A braisa says, Bishtar Ketzad, how is Kenyan Shtar accomplished? Kosovoy alani yor oyal cheres, if the seller writes out a document on a piece of paper, or on a piece of earthenware, earlier in the Masechta, Tosfos refers over here to something they discussed earlier in the Masechta, can a document in fact be written on earthenware? Isn't there the problem that it's very on a piece of clay? Isn't it the problem that could very easily be altered or erased or forged or whatever? And so Tosfos discusses over there that would be, if we say like Rabbi Lozer, Eidim Masira Kauti, then you don't have a problem. You have Eidim Masira that was given in front of, and they'll see what was written in the shtar, and they can testify to it later. If you went like a mayor, Eidim Chasima Kauti, then yes, that's true. You might not be able to write on a cheres, because then it could easily be altered or erased or what have you.
But if the signatures are there, we know.
Yeah, but the point is, he may have forged it. It's very easy to alter or forge the signatures or something on cheres as compared to New York. On Niyar, it's nowadays we use Niyar to mean paper, but in Gemara terminology, Niyar means papyrus, which is made out of stems of certain plants that are glued together. So if you erase that, it's very noticeable that there was an erasure over there. So therefore, so you can tell. A cheres, you can't tell as much. Anyway, so he writes on Niyar al cheres. He writes, and by the way, that works even if the piece of paper or the cheres is not a shavaprota. He writes, for example, sodi mechuralach, my field is sold to you, or sodi nesunalach, or my field is given to you. Then the field is considered given, is considered sold or given. So we see that just the shtar itself is enough. You don't need you don't need money. So what are you, Shmuel, telling me? You have to actually pay money, and only then does the shtar go together with it. Here we see that all you need is the shtar, and the answer is who moistiv law, who mafanik law. Rav Hamnuna brought up the question. He's also the one who answers it. The braisa is talking specifically about a case where he's selling the field because it's bad. It's not a good quality field. He's happy to get rid of it. So yes, he does want money for it, but on the other hand, he wants that the kinyan should take place as soon as possible, so the other guy doesn't change his mind. He wants to unload it. So therefore, therefore in a case like that, a shtar by itself will be good enough, and he'll say the kesef I'll receive later. And the point is, once the shtar has changed hands, neither of them can change his mind. So now, later on, the guy says, I decided, after all, I don't really want a field like this. The other guy can tell him, I'm sorry, you already gave me a shtar. You still owe me the money, and if not, I'm taking you to Beis Din.
So this piece we brought down before, where sometimes he would give the tzarav.
So that was something else. That was with Idi Ba'ov, and that was something else. He was saying there it was a two-part kinyan. There was kesef and there was shtar. Oh. So he was saying that the kinyan won't be complete from both sides until both the kesef and the shtar are given. So and therefore, if only one of them is given, then it leaves one or the other of us the option to back out of it. But here we're talking about where it's a one-part kinyan exclusively with shtar. So there, and all it is once the kinyan has been accomplished, later on the kesef has to be paid. So now Moichos Sadeu Neirasa, he wants to get the sale finalized as soon as possible before the guy changes his mind. So therefore, shtar is enough. But otherwise, we have Shmuel's rule that you need kesef as well. That's one answer. Rav Ashi gives a different answer. The case the Braisa is talking about, now the assumption is that the Braisa was talking about two possibilities, one where he's selling it and one where he's giving it. After all, the Braisa had used the expression sodi mechuralach, sodi nesunalach, which implies that we're talking about a sale or a gift. But Rav Ashi says, no, that's not what it means. It means the Braisa is talking about one case where he's just giving him the field as a gift. So therefore, so he's giving him the field as a gift, but So why would he be writing Sodi Mechur Alach? You could say he's doing that in order to improve the other guy's koyach in this field. For example, it means that there is achrayus involved. It means that it means that now, if this field gets taken, so Reuven has given the field to Shimon. If now later on, because Reuven owes money to Levi, Levi goes and takes away the field from Shimon. If it was written as a matana, then Shimon wouldn't have any recourse. You got it as a present. What do you want from me? But because he writes Loshen Mecher, it means in effect that Reuven is saying, I'm taking achrayus for this field. I will reimburse you for the fact that Levi took it away from me. So therefore, in other words, Rav Ashi is saying, when he says Sodi Mechoraloch, Sodi Nesunaloch, what he means is he actually wrote both things. Not that he wrote Mechora in a case where he's selling it, or Nesuna in a case he's giving it. He actually wrote both Lashonis and the Shtar, and that way it improves the guy's position as far as the dinim if it gets taken away from him. And then Tosfos also adds that writing matona has an advantage as far as the dinim bar mitzvah, where we know you have a property for sale. The neighbors have first rights to buy that property because Sisa Yoshev Atov. This way they have one big property, one big field. But on the other hand, the Gemara in Bava Metzia, when it goes through, they have a sugi over there that discusses the dinim bar mitzvah. And the Gemara discusses over there, a matona usually does not involve, there's not by metzra, because you could say, what's the whole idea by metzra? Instead of selling to that guy, duval sisai yoshev atov, and sell it to me instead. A matona, you can't say that. Obviously, why are you giving the guy a field as a matona? Because he did you some favor or something like that. So therefore, that wouldn't apply. So therefore, writing matona helps him as far as by metzra. Tosfos actually points out, though, the Gemara does say over there that a matona that has achrayus is considered for that purpose like a sale, because usually most people don't do achrayus in connection with matona. What's the idea? Not only I'm giving you this field, but I'm going to reimburse you for it if it gets taken away from you. Why would a person do that? So therefore, in other words, in effect, the Gemara says over there, such a thing is really just a sale disguised under the name Matana. So how does that fit with our Gemara over here? And so Tosfos says, what we mean is he's actually writing him two shtaris. He's writing him one where he says Sodi Mechoraloch and another one where he says Sodi Nesunaloch. And this way, the guy can use either one as he needs it. If he needs it for Bar Mitzvah, he'll show the one of Matana. And if he needs it as far as Achrayus, he'll pull out the one of Mecher. And then Tosfos goes on to discuss another possibility that maybe, in fact, it would work even if they're all written in one shtar. one point is Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that another nafka minna between a sale and a gift would be as far as what we say moicher ba'ain machlokas in Gemara and Bava Basra moicher ba'ain yofa moicher ba'ain ra moicher. Does he add generously things like an easement toward to get to something else on the property or not? But when he's giving away noisin ba'ain yofa noisin, so that would be another nafka minna between a sale and a gift. Anyway, so we see from that, though, that a shtar does work. So in summary, then, a shtar works to acquire karka. If it's moicho sedeh mepnei rasa, then it works exclusively. If it's also, like Rav Ashi says, where he's really giving it to him as a matana, and he's just putting in a sale as well, in order to then that also works. Other than that, in order for a shtar to work, it has to be kesef involved as well, because otherwise he's not giving it away for free. Next, but uva chazaka, the third thing we said is that you can acquire real estate with chazaka. Minolon, where do we get that from? Amachizkia, amakra. So Chizkia says, here's another pasuk also from Sefer Yirmiyah in a different context. After the Churban, you have a story over there that most of the Jews were taken into Golos and Babel. You had the few Jews who were left behind with Gedaliah as their governor, coming up to Tzum Gedaliah soon. So Gedaliah says to the people over there, don't worry, the Kastim aren't going to harm you, etc. And he tells them, you settle in over here in Eretz Yisrael. And he tells them, Shvu ba'arecha masher tefas them. You live in your cities, which you've seized. In other words, you think of it, Eretz Yisrael, or at least Eretz Yehuda at that point, was basically empty of people. You have these few Jews, so anyone could take possession of a city or an area over there and then settle over there. So Gedalia tells them, go ahead and do that. Everybody pick yourselves a place to live and go ahead and live there.
That's why the people in the region that had Chazaka lived before.
They're gone now. I mean, eventually, when they come back from Golis Volvo, we'll have to square things up.
But right.
But right now, he's saying the fact is, you have these places that are empty. You may have even the original owners were killed, and it's hard to trace the ocean, whatever it is. The point is, right now, you have a Sher Tefastim. You might even have, actually, when you think about it, it might even be that the people who were taken into Golis had Yush. Yumi has told them before, there's going to be 70 years of Golis Volvo, so very few of them expect to be alive to get it back, so they may have been miyash on it. Whatever the case, he's using the expression asher to fast them, that you seize, that you grab these cities. So, in other words, the Gemara explains, Gedalia is telling them, bamet to fast them, how did you grab title to these cities? The yeshiva, by sitting, by living in those cities, the living itself is not the chazaka, but practically speaking, when you're living in a place, soon enough you're going to be nor god or parats, you're going to be locking or breaking down or filling in fences or whatever. So therefore, soon enough, when you're living in a place, you're soon enough going to make a kinyan chazaka on it. So therefore, we see that kind of thing is coming. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught a different source for kinyan chazaka. Hashem says to the Jewish people, when they conquer Eretz Yisrael, v'yirishtem oisa v'yishabtem ba, you're going to inherit Eretz Yisrael and you're going to live in it. Meaning the same thing, b'me yirashtem, in what way are you inheriting Eretz Yisrael? B'yeshiva, by living over there, which is kinyan chazaka, again, because practically speaking, when you're living in a place, soon enough you're going to be making. Soon enough you're going to be building or taking down doors or walls or what have you, and therefore that'll be a chazaka. The Pnei Yeshua points out, you know, you have. Like this, Eretz Yisrael was divided by a girdle, so why do they need chazaka anyway? The question is brought up. So the Bnei Yeshua says, because the fact is, you have areas, you know, from when they made the girdle until they actually divided it up, some time passed. Meanwhile, there were people who passed away in between, so the Yoshim need kinyan chazaka in order to acquire it. You have people who, you have Bnei Gad or Bnei Reuven, you have the additional portions over there, so therefore, they need chazaka about that. And there's another point also that a couple of Achronim talk about. Maybe the girdle was only how it was divided among the Shvatim was by girdle. Not necessarily did each individual person get their plot in Eretz Yisrael up in girdle. So that may have required chazaka.
Wasn't the family, the larger families?
Large. So they have actually a Machlokas Rashi and the Ramban, how that worked. Is it that each family was supposed to get an approximately equal size plot? Or not really equal size, it actually mentions on Chumash, based on the Gemara and Baba Basra, is really as far as the value of the land, because, you know, Idis is worth more than Ziboris, that kind of thing. But yeah, Machlokas Rashi and the Ramban, is it that each Shevet got an equal portion, and therefore larger Shvatim, everybody got a smaller plot for themselves, or is it that the size of the portion for the Shevet was adjusted based on the number of people in the Shevet? But anyway, the point is, even when they made the girdle, again, like the Pnei Yeshua is saying, you have cases where you need something else as well, or you have cases where there may not have even been a girdle at all, at least by Bnei God or Bnei Ruv. So you need chazaka. That would probably explain, though, why Chizkiah doesn't like Tanan Veda Bishmal. Wouldn't it be better to bring something from a Pasuk in Chumash? Why is he bringing from a Pasuk in Nevi'im? The Pashtos, because you could argue, maybe not necessarily like that. Maybe every single person got their portion in Eretz Yisrael by girdle, and no chazaka was needed. Whereas by the story with Gedalia, we clearly see the expression, ba'orechem asher tefastem, that ushvu ba'orechem asher tefastem, that the asher tefastem is accomplished through Yeshiva. Okay. So that takes care of how we know the chazaka works. Next, we said she'ein lahem achrayus. We said, on the other hand, nechosim she'ein lahem achrayus, which is to say, a daf chavav in condition, which is to say, metautlin can be acquired only with meshicha, meaning not with kesef. So menolon, where do we know that from? So dichtib, because the pasuk says v'chi simkeru mimkar la'amisecha, when you sell something to your fellow Jew, oy konei miyada misecha, or when you buy from the hand of your fellow Jew. So the hand means dovra nikta miyad liyad, means it has to be something that's transferred from hand to hand, and so therefore, So what does it mean? So it means, in other words, you're taking it from the other person's hand, which is meshicha. But that applies only to davran and only davran niknim yad liyad. So it's something that can be transferred from one hand to another, namely metalpelin. So that's according to, now that's one way of looking at it. In other words, is that daraisa, even daraisa, money will not acquire metalpelin, and you need meshicha or one of the other methods of kinyan that works by metalpelin. However, the Gemara says, what about according to Rabbi Yochanan? He learns in the Gemara and Baba Metzia that actually midaraisa, money would work to accomplish a kinyan of metalpelin as well. Rashi brings, because we find by Hekdesh for Nosan Akesef for Kamloi, and so Rabbi Yochanan says really the same thing would apply to metalpelin between one hedyot and another as well. And he explains in the Gemara in Bava Metzia the reason why the Chachamim changed that. You have the problem called Nisrufu Chitecha Ba'aliyah. You may have the case. Imagine Reuven buys a bunch of wheat from Shimon. The wheat is stored in Shimon's attic. Now, if money has changed hands and it doesn't belong to Shimon anymore, if a fire breaks out or something, Shimon has no incentive to say it. He'll go to Reuven later and say, I'm sorry, a fire broke out and it's all gone. Whereas if it still belongs to Shimon until a kinyan of some kind is made, then Shimon has an incentive to say it, because otherwise he's not getting his money. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says that's why the Chachamim made the takana of Meshicha. So then, Ma'ikal Meimar. So then, according to that, where do we get that it's only Meshicha? And the answer is, you're right. Tana takant did abonim katani. The Tana is not, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Tana is not mentioning how it works daraisa. He's saying, eventually, now, after this takana did abonim, then this is how you're acquiring metalpelin. Okay. Next, we said, nechosim she'en lahem nachrayus. We said that there is a way to acquire metalpelin with kesef by kinyan agav. We said you're acquiring karka, and along with it, you're acquiring metalpelin. And the kinyan that works for the karka also works for the metalpelin. So the Gemara says, Menahani Mili, where do we know that from? It's interesting, by the way, and I didn't look up an answer to this, why sometimes the Gemara says Menolon, like we had by some of the other Kesef Menolon, Chalazaka Menolon, etc., where here we have Menahani Mili. So maybe what it is is that one is used where we know the halacha, we just have to figure out what particular pasuk, and the other one is like we wouldn't even know this halacha at all. So where are we getting it from? Anyway, you have a pasuk regarding Yehoshaphat. So Yehoshaphat was one of the kings of Yehuda. The pasuk mentions he had a bunch of sons. And the pasuk says, "Vayitin lahem aviyam matonis v'gomer." It says their father gave them lots of presents, and it mentions he gave them silver and gold and so forth. Im ore mitzures v'Yehuda, together with fortified cities in Yehuda. So we learn from that, in other words, that this was an example of kinyan agav. He gave them the cities, and along with them he gave them the metalpelin. So that was kinyan agav.
Metalpelin had to be in the field.
That's the next thing the Gemara is going to discuss is whether kinyan agav requires them to be in there itself. So therefore, we see from that the concept of kinyan agav. The pasuk, by the way, the context the pasuk is mentioning it is, it goes on to say the second half of the pasuk we learned about in Ksubas, v'asam amlocham nasan liyehodam kihu abuchur, that as far as the kingship, he gave it to Yehodam because he was the eldest, and the eldest, when he's mamal and mokam avoysev, when he's of the caliber of his fathers as far as Torah and Yira, then he succeeds his father. So therefore, in other words, the pasuk is saying Yehoshaphat gave all his other sons nice presents, but the kingship he gave only to Yehodam. Yehoram actually ended up being a Rosha. Apparently, while Yehoshaphat was alive, he was a tzaddik, or at least he put on a good show of it. The pasuk goes on to say afterwards he killed his brothers and did lots of other terrible things. Anyway. Okay. So Iboilahu. So now the question becomes, but in Siburim Oiloi, do we require for Kinyan Agav that the metalpelin are actually piled up right there in that field, in that karka, oiloi, or maybe not necessary? Which, by the way, Rishonim bring up a point, and if they're in the property, he's coding it through kinyan chotzer. Why do we need to resort to kinyan agav? And they have a couple of different answers. One of them being that the Ritva brings up a point that for kinyan chotzer, you have to have chotzer amishtameres. You have to have that the field has a fence around it or something. Whereas here, for kinyan agav, it works even if ain't a mishtameres. And they ask on him. That doesn't seem to fit with the Gemara and Bava Metzia, and they give different other answers among them. That Kinyan Agav, you acquire both of them at the same time. At the same time, whereas Kinyan Chotzer requires that you first own the Chotzer. We learned in Gittin, and we learned a little bit in Ar Masechta. But you have, for example, Gittev Yode Boin Keachad, Gittev Chatzera Boin Keachas, or whatever. So sometimes you can have that, but ordinarily you have to acquire the Chotzer first before you acquire the Metaltlin. Whereas with Kinyan Agav, you can acquire them both at the same time. Okay, so Amar Rabbi Yosef Toshma, let's prove from the following Mishnah. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Karka Kol Shehu Chayevus V'Peir Ol B'Bikurim, even a small amount of land is chayev in peya. You'll have to leave peya for the poor people in it. Even no matter how tiny it is, in fact, the Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, even if like literally only one stalk of wheat can grow there, it's so tiny, you still have to get payah from it. Uba bikurim, you're also going to be chayev in bikurim from such a place. Now Rashi brings but rejects a girsa that also said with vidri, that when it comes to vidri maisris, we be out here kodesh men abayis and all that, that would also apply. Rashi takes that out because the fact is you don't need to have karka to do vidri maisris. As long as you had maiser, let's say you bought produce and you gave maiser from it, you still do vidri maisris. So therefore you don't need karka kol shehu for it. However, Tosfos justifies and says. Tosfos says it's true, you do take out the word vidri, but he gives for a different reason. Rashi had brought the point because you could still say, even if you don't have karka, you can still say Yuvarichas Amcha is Yisrael Ves Adama Asher Nesata Lanu, because we Jewish people collectively have Adama, whereas by Bikurim it's Asher Nesata Li Hashem. So you have to have it in person. And Tosfos brings a different reason why vidri wouldn't be relevant over here. So Chayevus V'Peyol Bikurim. The licht of Olel Prusbol, continues Rabbi Akiva, another point you can accomplish with karka that's only a tiny amount of karka, you can use it as a basis for writing a Prusbol. We learned in Gittin, in order to write a Prusbol, it has to be that the loiva has karka. We learned over there, if he doesn't, then the malva can be machna him a little bit, whatever the case, even if the loiva only has a tiny amount of karka, then that's enough as a basis for writing a Prusbol. Nowadays, we don't necessarily look out for that. One reason being because you have the concept that every yid has a share in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam doesn't hold of that, but other Rishonim do. Anyway, and another point, Rabbi Akiva says, which is relevant to our sugya, the litness im nechasim she'en lemachrayus. And also that you can use even a tiny amount of land to acquire nechasim she'en lemachrayus with Kinyan Agav. So wouldn't that show the Amud Be'in and Siburim, if you're going to tell me that the metalman have to be piled on the land, Kol Shehu L'Mai Chozi, if you have a tiny little piece of land, how could you put metalman in it? So obviously, therefore, it doesn't require Siburim. The answer is not necessarily. Targuma Rav Shmuel Bar Bisna, Kameid Rav Yosef, Rav Shmuel Bar Bisna explained in front of Rav Yosef, you could have an example. Kugon Shenotz Bar Machat. What if you take a needle and you stick it into that tiny little piece of land? So there's an example where you're acquiring metaltlin agav kauka, and the metaltlin are actually in the kauka, even though it's a tiny amount. Omelet of Yosef. Rabbi Yosef says, "Kavstaton, you're hurting me." Siartani, Rashi says, like you're hurting me. You're being mitzayim. There's a different Gemara where he uses the expression kavstaton, and Rashi explains over there more like you disgust me. It's a strong expression. Is the Tana going to go spend his time just to tell us and tell us the whole concept of Kinyan Agav just to tell us how you acquire a needle? Rav Ashi says, well, why not? Man lay malon de la tola be magunisi de shabia alpha zuzi. Suppose now you go and hang on that needle a pearl which is worth 1,000 zuz. So yes, we need to know how you're acquiring the needle and the margolis that's attached to it. And therefore, yes, you could say, in other words, this is all assuming that you need that Kinyan Agav requires it to be in the karka itself. So it might be that it requires Sivurim, and we're saying that Karka Kolsha, who works for that purpose, to acquire this Margolis, which, by the way, you know, we talked about yesterday in connection with the elephant and the Kalim, the question of, can the thing that you're acquiring be sticking out of the Kalim that you're acquiring with? Here we have another example of that. There, most of the elephant's body is sticking out beyond the Kalim, because the Kalim is only his feet are in. Here we have a similar example where the margolis is not necessarily on top of the karka, only the point of the needle is in this karka kolshu, and it still works. Tashma, Amr Rabbi Elazar, Maisa b'Madoni Echad Choyah b'Yerushalayim. It happened with a person from Modon who lived in Yerushalayim, the city of Modon. Rashi brings from Sefer Yehoshua. It's the name of a city in Eretz Yisrael. When it lists the 31 kings of Canaan that the Jewish people conquered and defeated and killed, it mentions that they're Melech Modon Echad. It's a place, someplace in the north central Eretz Yisrael. Anyway. So there was a yid from there, Shahoyah b'Yerushalayim, Shahoyah l'metalpilin harbe. He had a lot of metalpilin, and here it's a lot of metalpilin. So we're not just talking about one pearl or whatever. Ubikash litna mabatana. He wanted to give them as a gift to somebody. Omruloi. So they told him, ein lo takona ad sheyakne algabe karka. So they told him, you don't have any other way of being makna them unless you do it algav karka, unless you do kinyan agav. Further, the Gemara is going to discuss, well, why not? You can do Kinyan Chalifin, you can do lots of other things. Why are they telling him the only way is Kinyan Agav? So we'll get back to that in the Gemara. We'll get back to that in the Gemara soon. So what did he do? Holach b'lokach base seller. He went and bought a piece of property that is a base seller. So Rashi says two possibilities. One is base seller could mean a bit of land that's only the size of a sella coin, which is a very small amount of land. The Gemara elsewhere explains that a sella coin has a circumference of one tefach. If you put a string, or if you measure around the edge of the sella coin, you'll have a measurement of one tefach. So across it, it's only one third of a tefach. So you're talking like an inch or something. That's Rashi's first explanation. The second explanation is that he bought literally a sella, as in a little piece of land that had a sharp point of rock sticking out of it. In any case, it's not the kind of thing where you can pile things up on. So he went and bought that. Further on, the Gemara is going to explain a different reason why it was called base sella, but right now we're assuming that it was one of these two things. Anyway, for Omer, he said, the north side of this little tiny piece of karka is going to go to Pliny, the imoy meyat sonu meyachavius, and along with that, he's going to acquire 100 of my sheep and 100 of my barrels of wine. And then he died without doing any further kinyan. The kimo es devarav, and the chacham said what he did is valid, and that was a valid kinyan agav. So now that other guy owns the sheep and the wine and whatever. Now you could argue Tosfos Riyah Zaken says, well, mitzvah kaim divrei ames. But the point is that the Gemara is going to discuss over here not necessarily. First of all, the Gemara is going to discuss in a minute whether he was a Bori or a Shkimara at the time. But anyway, the point is, Tosfos Riyah Zaken says that Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Ames is where, for example, he says, bring this money to Pliny. Where here he didn't say bring it to him. He's just saying he is koneh. So therefore, if you didn't have a kinyan while he was still alive, then you wouldn't say mitzvah. You wouldn't say mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. So therefore, it has to be. How did it work on the basis of kinyan agav? Now, if you tell me the metalpin have to be actually piled up in the karka. Base seller, the Mayachazi, how can you put them in a base seller? Whether you understand, like Rashi's first explanation, that it means it was the size of a seller coin, an inch across, or whether you understand, like the second explanation, that it was seller as in the sense of a rock, as in a short peak of rock, where you can't pile anything on it. Either way, how is he putting the sheep and the barrels of wine over there? The answer is, mi sabret. So base seller, the Mayachazi, what would you use it for? So the answer is mi sabrek, beisela, sela mamish. You're thinking that the word beisela in the story means an actual size of a sela or a piece of rock that was a sela. My sela de nofish tova. It may have actually been a very large area where you could actually put the sheep and the wine in it. By my korele sela to koshi pesela. They call it beisela because it was a hard, rocky ground. So therefore, he was able to buy it cheap and use it for Kenyan agav. Still no proof from that. That Kenyan agav requires the metalphalon to actually be located on the karka. Well, it does or doesn't. Maybe it does. And this guy actually, the point is, in other words, we're establishing that he bought the karka. He wanted to buy a cheap piece of karka just so he can accomplish his matana. So that's why the Gemara originally assumed that it was a tiny little piece of karka. But now we're saying, no, it may have been a very large area, but he bought it cheap because the owner of it couldn't use it for anything else. Okay. So no proof from that. So the Gemara says Toshma, the Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Maisa ba'odim echad shecholah b'Yerushalayim. Sorry, the case of the body of the Shlimara is the next case over here. But yeah, so Maisa ba'odim echad shecholah b'Yerushalayim k'Rabbi Eliezer. So there was a person in Yerushalayim who was sick, and then if we say that he was sick, so you have two different versions whether he was sick or whether he was healthy. So according to one version, he was sick. And that version would follow Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, where Rabbi Eliezer holds. Rabbi Eliezer does not hold of the concept divish shchiv merah k'suvin v'chim esurin domo. So even the guy was a shchiv merah, Rabbi Eliezer is still going to say you need an actual method of kinyan. So that's one possibility. Another possibility is he was healthy, and then in that case, then the story could be according to the chachamim that if he was a shchiv merah, you wouldn't have needed any of this, and only because he's a bori do you need this. Anyway, again, he had a lot of metaltlin, a brikish litin matana. He wanted to give them away as a gift. So again, like in the previous story, they told him that he needs to be makne agav karka, he needs to do kinyan agav. Ma also, so what did he do? Holach v'lokach beis roiva. He went and bought a base roiva. Now a base roiva is an area where you can plant one quarter of a cav of seeds. So you have like this. You have the Chatzara Mishkan was 50 by 100 amas, and that's base sasayim, which comes up in connection with the halachas of Eruvin. So now if you calculate it down from there, so you divide a sa into kavim and a kav into quarters, and similarly you divide this area, so you end up with if base sasayim is 5,000 square amas, then a base sa is 2,500 square amas. A quarter of a kav is 1/24 of a sa. So therefore, it'd be 1/24 of 2,500 square feet. So you're talking a little square amos. So you're talking a little just over 100 square amos. It's an area. It comes up in the halachos of kilayim. It's an area. If it was a square, it would be approximately 10 1/5 amos by 10 1/5 amos. So you're talking like 15 by 15 feet or so. So now, unlike with the base cella, where we can argue that cella means rock and it means it was a large area, here we're making it very clear. And it was a base roiva. Anyway, so he went and bought that samoch l'Yerushalayim, near Yerushalayim. But Omer, and he said, out of that, tefach al tefach l'Ploini, a tefach by tefach area of this base roiva is going to belong to Ploini. The imei meyat sonu meyachobius, and together with it is going to go 100 sheep and 100 barrels. Umes, and he died, v'kimu chacham mes dvarav. And the chacham again upheld what he said and said that it was a valid gift. By the way, the Rashba points out, it's not that he has to say, in the previous story also, he says the north side, it's not that he would have to davka mention a particular part of it with which he's being machmet. But here, what it was is he did actually plan to divide up the actual property itself as with the actual land itself, the base seller or the base roiva. So therefore, in that case, then he needed to specify what goes to who. Anyway, the point is, v'yamet svorim, v'yamet be'inin svorim, if you tell me that we need the metalplin to be piled up in the property, tefach al tefach l'mayachazi, then how could you do that in a tefach al tefach? The answer is not necessarily, because you could say hochav mayaskin on the dummy. You could say he doesn't mean he's giving the actual sheep and the actual wine itself to the people. He means that he's giving them the value of those things. He has money to the value of 100 sheep and 100 barrels of wine. So now the money, the coins, conceivably he could stack up in that tefach al tefach area. So the Gemara says, "Halchi nami mistabra." In fact, it seems logical to understand that way, that's what it means. Disagrad meyatzonu meyachobias mamish. If he actually wanted to give him 100 sheep and 100 barrels of wine, why does he need kinyan agav? Nikninu niyale b'chalifin. Why can't he equally well? It's metalin. He could have the other guy acquire it with chalifin. If you say it's money, then you have the rule matbeya in a nikna b'chalifin. You can't acquire coins using chalifin. But the Gemara tells us in Brava Metzia. But if it's other metalin, then he could have just as well used kinyan chalifin. Why are they telling him the only possible way is kinyan agav? So the Gemara asks, "Ve'ela ma'ila dami?" So what? You're going to say that it's talking about money. So you also have other ways. Nikninu niyale b'mashicha. So fine, then he could have just as well had mashicha done on the money. Again, it's not necessary to resort to kinyan agav when you have other methods as well. So ela delesi lemakabel matana. Obviously, we have to understand the scenario was that the one who was going to be receiving the matana wasn't there at the time. So therefore, you can't have him do mashicha because he's not present. Well, you could say hachnami delesi lemakabel matana. So you could say the same thing. You can't do kinyan chalifin because the makabel matana is not around. So no proof. Maybe if he was around, then yes, the Chachamim would have told this fellow he has other methods available. But because he's not around, then therefore Chalifin is not going to work. Therefore, we need Kinyan Agav. So that's not a proof, though, that he was giving him money rather than actual sheep or wine or whatever. So the Gemara says, so what? Still, there are other ways to accomplish it. V'nizabninu nihale agav acher. Rather, why can't he be mizaket to him through something else, through somebody else? Zochim la'adam shalei b'fanav. So let Reuven wants to give the gift to Shimon. Let him tell Levi, you acquire this on behalf of Shimon, the same way as we do it with Eruv Chatzeres or whatever, and that would work. So, and then he could do Mashicha. Or chalifin or whatever, and the answer is you could say lois samchadaita. You could say that you could say he doesn't want to rely on a third party. He doesn't want to rely on Levi. Rashi says loy mamin ba'anshi amokim limsei metalpin. He didn't trust the locals to give over the metalpin. Maybe that's why, particularly in the first story, we're stressing that the fellow was from Modern. Maybe the idea is like he's not even a local in Yerushalayim, so therefore he's more concerned that they might take advantage. By the way, the word modern itself means an argument, so maybe he was an argumentative sort of person. But anyway, so lois samchadaita sabar, he thinks to himself, that third party, Levi, shomit v'ochelahu, he may grab them and eat them himself. He may figure, look, I was zoicha in them, so who cares about the other fellow? I have them, and I'm going to grab them for myself, so therefore he doesn't want to involve a third party. So the Gemara says, "Ve'ela mai ein le'takana." So okay, what do they mean, ein le'takana? The fact is, there are other methods of kinyan available. Hachikamar. So what they meant is, "Lemai delay samchadaite." Given that you, Reuven, do not have that smichus das, and you don't want to rely on a third party, ein le'takana shi'akdim agabe karka. Then the only way you can accomplish it is kinyan agav. But it's true. If you wanted, there would have been other methods. You could have used a third party, and you wouldn't need kinyan agav. The point is, in other words, that we don't yet have a proof of whether the metalpin have to be tzvurim in the karka or not. Maybe they do, and we're saying that what he was giving was money, and it's actually tzavur, it's actually piled over there. But maybe on the other hand, maybe not. Maybe he was giving him actual sheep and actual wheat, and it shows that they don't have to be piled, and it shows they don't have to be piled in the karka. Now, Tosfos discusses this in some detail and brings a different girsa over here, according to which. So it comes out, according to the girsa we have in front of us, we're not sure what the scenario was, whether it was money or whether it was actual sheep and wine. Tosfos brings a different girsa that, in fact, the Gemara concluded definitively that it is money, and therefore that would show that Ba'in and Siburim. But the Gemara is going to go on to discuss this point further, and we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, and see whether in the end, in fact, it does require Siburim or not, and then we'll get into that. So we'll continue that discussion tomorrow, Best Hashem. Shkoyach, everyone.